what happens when the screen goes red. For most of us, a moment like that just means a reboot. But in healthcare, it can mean something far more serious, like interruptions to patient care and even risk to human life. Well, today's episode was recorded live at iGel's Now and Next event in Frankfurt. And I got to sit down with Field CTO for Healthcare at iGel Technology. And with more than two decades of experience across cybersecurity, identity, and endpoint management, Jason is going to share today why endpoint continuity is one of the most overlooked elements of disaster recovery planning. And also why hospitals can no longer afford to ignore it. Because we're going to discuss why healthcare has a zero tolerance for downtime and how a single ransomware attack can cripple thousands of devices across a hospital system. And also why prevention first resilience is rapidly becoming the new standard for business continuity. From dual boot recovery modes to secure by design operating systems, Jason is going to share some practical ways that organisations, especially in healthcare, could move from weeks of disruption, like we've seen at M&S and Land Rover here in the UK, to recovery in just minutes. It's a big topic, this one. As always, a quick thank you to our sponsor this month for backing all the shows on the Tech Talks network. And I'm currently producing more than 60 different interviews a month, and that takes a real collaboration. And I'm proud to work with partners who believe in open conversation about how technology can drive progress. One of the phrases I've heard on this podcast very often is data is the new oil. But let's be honest, it's more like the new oxygen, especially with AI, because without data, there is no AI. And your business can't function without it. NordLayer, they ensure that your data moves securely between people, apps, and offices through encrypted tunnels. Encrypted tunnels and strict access controls. And it keeps sensitive information out of reach from prying eyes, but gives you the full visibility over how your network is used. Now, I've heard many stories on here where a single exposed endpoint quickly turned into a company-wide breach. But NordLayer, they will make sure that that doesn't happen to you. So if this interests you, please go to nordlayer.com/techtalksdaily. And if you enter the special code techdaily-28, you'll also get 28% off. So please go check that out. Let me know your thoughts. But enough from me. Let's get Jason onto the podcast now. So thank you for joining me here at iGel Now and Next. Can you tell everyone listening a little about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So my name is Jason Mafera. I'm the healthcare CTO for iGel, and I focus on our healthcare vertical and our integration partners and capabilities in that space.
So when we're looking at things like healthcare, it's well known for having zero tolerance for downtime. So how are hospitals and health systems, how are they applying endpoint resilience differently compared to other industries in the private sector, maybe?
Yeah, I think, well, first, it's more important than ever to have that continuity of care, essentially, within these healthcare organizations. It's really not acceptable to have downtime, because that leads to challenges with patient care. If you can't maintain the continuity of that care, ultimately at the end of the day, it can impact patient lives. Now, there's a whole host of other challenges that hospitals deal with around those sorts of incidents and making sure the devices have their uptime that they need. Everything from loss of revenue, of course, to reputational impact. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to maintaining that patient safety and patient care in a way that doesn't impact, you know, patient lives.
And on stage yesterday, you described that moment where the screens went red as a turning point for many CIOs. So why do you think, what do you think that makes that scenario such a blind spot in most business continuity plans today?
Well, it's interesting. I think that in general, the focus has been around the infrastructure itself. So the applications, the data, the network connectivity. And when we talk to folks about this, they start to realize that they haven't included the endpoint portion within their planning. And it's really critical because, you know, as I like to talk to folks, I say, you know, you can have the best plans in place for the infrastructure and the apps and the data, all these things to make sure you have the availability and security of that. But there's always a device between, in this case, the clinician and those applications and workloads that they need. So if you've left that endpoint device out of that planning, now you really have a huge impact, because what we see is that when one of these incidents occurs, the most time-consuming and costly portion of the recovery is the endpoint devices. And it's because they're distributed. There's many of them. There's more devices than there are even providers in an organization. If you look and see how many stations there are in exam rooms, in doctor's lounges, at the nursing stations, kiosks, digital display and signage for, you know, things like maintaining patient flow within the organization's displays in the ORs and the EDs, all these sorts of things with tracking boards, et cetera. And all of those devices tend to get impacted. And so you can really do the best job possible to have all of the availability of the data and applications. But if you leave out the endpoint components, you know, you have a real challenge because there's no way to get back to those things.
Yeah, I was talking with James Millington earlier, and he was talking about that a large enterprise could quite easily have 5,000 devices there that when they go, take 2.5 hours to rebuild each of those PCs. It's unthinkable, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a cascading issue. The amount of time and effort that it takes to go through that incident response and forensic process and then recovery, it's honestly going to be, you know, if you're lucky, days or weeks. But what we find in practice is it's generally more like months before you get back to kind of full strength of where you started before the incident. So not only is it costly, but, you know, it's very time consuming when it comes to going through that process.
And as you said, many organizations have that solid disaster recovery playbook for data and applications, but seldom for the endpoints. So why has that gap persisted for so long? And what is it that you think needs to shift in the leadership mindset to close that gap?
Yeah, I think, you know, even to me, when we started exploring this a few years ago, I expected the answers to be better. I hadn't been focused on this for a while. I was focused on general security, identity and access management, and these sorts of things. And as I started asking those questions in 2023, I couldn't believe the answers I was getting. Some of those answers were, it was everything from blank stares to, oh, we kind of just haven't considered that part of the equation, to, well, you know, we will warehouse some clean devices at, you know, a warehouse or in a storage room, these sorts of things. But now, you know, they don't have the ability to cover all of the devices. Like you say, if there's 5,000 devices, that may actually be kind of a small to medium hospital organization, at least in the US, in North America. We find that with all the acquisitions and, you know, consolidation that's happened with hospital systems, you could be looking at 20, 40, 80,000 endpoints. And then you really have a problem of scale. If the cyber incident kind of propagates around, as they tend to do, it just continues to compound that problem. And so as we asked about it, we heard those things, and then we heard, you know, we're just going to maybe go down to Best Buy and buy, you know, whatever Chromebooks and laptop devices they have, and that's how we'll kind of get back to limping along. But that's also a real big challenge, because you're not going to get enough devices to really even cover a small percentage. If you have 20,000 or 50,000, even 5,000, you know, how many laptops does Best Buy have? You know, a couple hundred maybe at any point in time. So you have to go to every Best Buy in the state. It's non-sustainable. So as we started to go through this, you know, shining a light on it, like many problems, until you identify it as an issue, I think what we've seen is that once an incident occurs at an organization, it becomes very visible. And, you know, then planning moving forward, it's, well, what do we do about those devices next time? And I think up until now, there hasn't been a great answer to that, which may also be part of the reason why the problem hasn't been focused on, because there weren't a lot of good solutions to actually help mitigate it and make that recovery faster.
And one of the key themes in your presentation was Business Continuity Disaster Recovery, or BCDR. So can you tell everyone listening a little bit more about this prevention first approach and how it keeps businesses running even when something like ransomware attacks, which we've seen, especially in the UK with our Land Rover to M&S, for example?
Yeah. So as I did that presentation yesterday, there are really three ways to deliver this solution. You know, we talked about having devices that you can recover quickly. But what we like to see, and this happens in quite a large number of areas, is native iGEL being deployed. And when a customer does that, they tend to find that, you know, these problems with ransomware and malware never show themselves, right? So what we found is that, you know, in the real world, when we've been in mixed environments where there's a deployment of iGEL and, say, a deployment of Windows alongside each other for different areas of the organization, when a cyber incident occurs, the Windows endpoints get impacted, and the only thing in that infrastructure that continues to operate are the iGEL devices. In practice, it's never been compromised. I'm not going to say it never could be, but the core security model that we provide, it's secure by design, and it's built that way from the ground up. So we have fewer challenges to start. Much malware isn't focused on our type of platform, tends to be focused around Windows because it is the larger, you know, deployed operating system, if you will. But what we find is that, you know, even if it was impacted, let's say, there are mechanisms built into the operating system that allow it to be reset to known good. So every reboot, because of that design we have, that preventative security model, with the read-only operating system and the chain of trust and the encryption that we deliver, every time you reboot the device, it goes back to a known good state, very much like a golden image on a virtualization platform. And let's say even that was impacted. There are also mechanisms built in to rapidly recover that device, kind of reset it to factory default, and then have it automatically re-onboard into the organization. So we've got a few options there. There are levels of kind of defense in depth, if you will, that deploying it natively is really the best defense, the best way to be proactive and preventative in protecting the endpoints from ransomware and malware.
So if we do have somebody listening, maybe in healthcare, and we've set off a few alarm bells and things that they should be doing, obviously iGEL talks about recovery in minutes rather than weeks. Can you just walk me through what happens behind the scenes to make the possible, technically, and sorting that in minutes? How do they do that?
Sure. So let's assume that those devices are still Windows endpoints right now, that we haven't done the thing we just talked about, which would kind of remove those issues. Let's assume those are Windows endpoints. We have two modes of operation. So the first is what we call iGEL Business Continuity Dual Boot. And what that does is we have Windows-specific software that installs on top of Windows, pushed out with normal Windows deployment components for applications, whether that's Intune or SCCM or another software deployment component. It pushes those components out, they install, and essentially what it does is it makes space within that Windows device for the iGEL components. So the partition that we put down, it kind of takes some space away from Windows, make sure there's still enough space, free space left afterwards, and then it lays our partition down. Now, that partition is in a proprietary format. It's encrypted, so not directly accessible from that Windows layer. And then it installs some components to manage, maintain, update, and invoke it when it's needed. So if that device that's in this dual boot mode gets compromised, the Windows components get compromised, you simply shut the device off and you reboot it, and you can go directly into iGEL. And when it does that, it isolates the Windows components. So they're not running, they're still in place, but what it does is it allows them to be available for future forensic analysis and re-imaging while still taking advantage of that in-place hardware to get the users, or in this case, the clinicians, back to working with the same workflows they had within Windows, but now within the secure operating environment, connecting them back. So that's kind of the first option. The second option is what we call our USB boot. And that's a specialized hardware device, kind of a special USB flash drive that you do the same thing. Windows gets compromised. You shut the device down. You plug this device in and then you boot to it. So again, doesn't touch the hard drive, boots the in-place hardware, and gives you this clean, secure operating environment that you can continue to use to access now those services that are either, you know, DR failover or IREs, right? We see a lot of this, which is those isolated recovery environments where they're completely separate from the production network. They are shut off or inaccessible, and they're turned up when an incident occurs and you need to fail over to them. So this USB boot device is very much an IRE for the endpoint, because until it's used, it's fully disconnected. It can't be impacted. And so what we're seeing are folks do a defense in depth approach where they deployed the dual boot components as the first line of defense. And then they have the USB boot devices as the secondary backup. So if for some reason the entire hard drive in that device was impacted or made inaccessible somehow and it just wouldn't boot at all, now you can do the same thing, shut it off, plug in the USB boot and boot to it. So what we find, especially in healthcare, is that folks are looking to layer these things together for this defense in depth, especially for the critical access areas. So the things like the ED, the OR, the ICU, the NICU, the places that absolutely can have no downtime, because that downtime can really impact patient care and, you know.
And of course, you've worked across cybersecurity, identity, and endpoint management for over two decades now. So how has the definition of resilience evolved in that time, or have you seen it evolve, particularly in this post-ransomware era that we find ourselves? You must have seen so many big changes.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've definitely seen an evolution. And, you know, it used to be that the attacks were maybe not so effective and couldn't impact as many devices. But of course, you know, the threat actors have continued to evolve their capabilities. And so we see, you know, every week, every month, there are more of these stories about these sorts of outages that, you know, are impacting the availability of these systems. And so I think what I've seen over time is more focus on making sure that the infrastructure has really resilient and fault-tolerant capabilities built into it. And I think that's where the focus has generally been up till now, is on making sure you can keep the data safe, making sure that you can recover that data, making sure that when an incident occurs, you can figure out the last known point of integrity of that data, that it hasn't been compromised or changed, those sorts of things. And I think a lot of investment has gone into those areas to solve those problems. And now we're kind of at the last mile. And it's starting to become more and more relevant, primarily because of ransomware and being able to take those devices offline and make them inaccessible until you pay or go through some recovery process. And so at iGEL, we're trying to make that portion of the overall problem easier to solve, more cost effective, and faster to recover, so that we can maintain business operations, essentially.
And if we look further ahead, how do you see endpoint continuity intersecting with, let's say, zero trust architecture and identity driven security models? Do you see all these coming together?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can't really have one without the other nowadays. You need that identity layer. You need those security layers. You need to focus on, you know, workflow optimization, right? We need to not only secure and protect, but we need to make it easy to use and seamless for the user, right? No heavy lift there. And so I think we continue to see that evolution over time. I think we'll see more and more sorts of secure operating environments that are purpose-built to be secure by design and facilitate all of those capabilities. So I think we're at the early days, honestly, and we'll continue to see that evolve as we go into the future. And I'm really interested to see kind of what innovation happens in the area.
And finally, when you're talking to executives who might be thinking, hey, it won't happen to us, what story or example most effectively changes their perspective on why endpoint continuity can't wait until after the next incident, which is probably likely to happen, unfortunately?
Yeah, well, I think what we see in practice is it's honestly, it's no more if this is going to happen, it's really when. And organizations continue to be impacted. Many are targeted specifically. And so I think what I generally will ask is, you know, when it comes to that planning, do you think you've done your due diligence? Have you gone far enough to have the capabilities you need to try and protect those things and then to recover them? Now, you know, they talk about recovery time objectives, right, for infrastructure, but there generally aren't recovery time objectives, these RTOs, for the endpoints. And back to that kind of initial point, it's like if you don't match those recovery time objectives, your infrastructure and your endpoints, now you've got all kinds of apps and data available, but no way to access them, right? So I'll generally ask, you know, how do you feel about working here? Because honestly, once you have one of these incidents occur, you may be looking for a new job, especially if you haven't taken the time and due diligence to try and do the best job, best effort to protect yourself using the best tools that are available.
Well, what I will do, because I know you're very active online, I've read a few of your blogs, so I will link to everything that you've written there and also the iGEL website and your LinkedIn. But I know how busy you are, so more than anything, just thank you for stopping by on the show floor and sharing your insights with me today. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, for sure. I really appreciate you taking the time as well, Neil.
I think as Jason made clear, resilience in healthcare is no longer about data backups or network redundancy. It's actually about ensuring clinicians can keep working, even when the worst happens. And this shift from reactive recovery to prevention-first protection could be the difference between continuity and crisis. So if you'd like to learn more, I'll include links to Jason's recent blogs, the iGEL website and his LinkedIn profile in the show notes. And I'd also love to hear your thoughts on everything we discussed today. Do you think most industries are truly prepared for endpoint level continuity? Or is healthcare the canary in the coal mine for a much wider issue? Please let me know your views on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, just at Neil C. Hughes. And please stay tuned for more conversations like this. And stay tuned for more conversations like this over at techtalksnetwork.com. There's thousands of interviews there just waiting for you. But that is it for today. So thank you, Jason, for sharing your insights with me. And a big thank you to each and every one of you listening. Speak to you soon. Bye for now.